I got the thumbs up. That must mean it's time for Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and oh, of course, it is Jacob, the chairman of the board. You know why I'm putting so much emphasis there? It's because it's his show today. It's what we call producer's choice, you know. And Jacob, I know that you spend inordinate amounts of time preparing to stump Tim and Johnny, frighten us, get us to talk.
Make him sound like the big bad boogeyman behind the boards, Jacob.
Well, I mean,
comes out on Friday to scare all the good people.
You know, asking us about our favorite TV teachers.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And actually, big shout out to, you know, Civic Media for really pulling out that that episode. Terry Barr. Love that, Terry. Hope you're hearing, because we thought that was a great episode. And, you know, a little bit of stuff potentially developing from that episode. We're going to keep that under wraps for now. But we've got some pretty good, powerful, you know, not a lot of, quote, traffic, but a powerful connection to somebody going, damn, thank you. Appreciate that. That's all I'm going to say at that, Johnny Lupinacci. You know what I'm talking about.
It's producer's choice day, Tim. I'm cutting you off. You're turning the whole show into some ramble about social media and like great Terry Barr wrote an article. Write another one about this. Let's get to it. It's producer's choice, man.
Yeah, Tim, enough about Craig T. Nelson coming on the show, okay? No one wants to hear about that. It's time for the program.
For choo-choo producer, Jacob's choice, chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
So every single producer's choice show has things in common. So there's a 60-second segment at the end. We always have our fun producer's choice intro song, and every show starts with Tim being scared of what I'm going to ask him. And usually the show ends up being like something like, what are your favorite dog breeds? I keep it pretty light, but we're going to have a serious intellectual smarty pants discussion today. And I think there's no better way, because we usually have Howard Zinn at the end of the show to give us some philosophical wisdom. Before this topic, I'm going to let another poet introduce it.
Hey, yo, Ice, man, I'm working on this term paper for college. What's the First Amendment?
Freedom of speech. That's some motherfucking bullshit. You say the wrong thing, they'll lock your ass up quick. The SEC says profanity, no airplay. They can shit while I take a shit all day. Think I give a fuck about
it. And then it just, you know, ironically, it's all censored after that point. Because he says a lot of bad words in that song. But that's Ice-T.
No words.
He's talking about freedom of speech. Dr. Tim Slecker, thank you for being my guest. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you for being here. I know we're all very busy, but this week people are talking about freedom of speech. It's big in our culture right now. People are afraid to say some things. People are mad at other people for saying things. It's a big hot button issue. I don't want to talk about specifics. I want to talk about what is this freedom of speech thing and why do we care so much about it? So Dr. Tim Slecker, maybe you could lead us off, but just for the uninitiated, people hear about freedom of speech. What does it actually mean in a democratic society?
Okay, what is it? What does it mean? Probably incredibly radically different questions, honestly, because I think the what is it would be simply, well, it's one of the amendments to our Constitution. It's in the Bill of Rights. And a lot of people point it out as saying, you can't take that away from me because it's guaranteed in our Constitution. So that's what it is. In other words, it's saying we have freedom of speech. What does it mean? Sometimes it depends what it potentially might mean. You know, because we also at the same time had heard that, well, you know, you can't yell fire in a movie theater, right? Yeah. That was kind of always the, well, you have freedom of speech except when when fire breaks out in a theater. Johnny's already pushing on that one. Right. But I mean, that's how it,
because you can, there's just a consequence to your action.
Right. That's what I'm saying. When recognizing that, and that's what I would say is Johnny is to say is that, you know, that freedom comes with responsibility. And I think that part of it is there too, is to say, you know, yeah, you can quote freely say things, but the things you say have sometimes consequences that can be incredibly painful for people who hear them or are affected by them. And so I think that's the part there that even, you know, kind of potentially, you know, hearing that Ice T kind of part in there, right? It kind of throws at you an emotional plea that feels very kind of confrontational, even in that rap style that he puts forward there, that kind of feels like I got this and it's under attack and you can't take that away from me. Well, it depends, you know, what you mean by, can you take away the freedom of speech? No. Can you be held consequentially at fault for speaking things? Yes, you can. We're seeing that, right? And so say we, you know, in the heat of passion, emotions, maybe things take over. But that, again, you know, you can't call. And I know, you know, we're kind of referring to, again, this, you know, horrible thing that happened. And you know, people's response and things like that, and characterizations, and it's you know, so yeah, what is it? We know what it is. What does it mean? It means that yes, you can say, but that I think Johnny would say, you know what, words have consequences.
If I could say something about
that. They have meaning. Okay.
Actually, Tim, yeah, you're meshing the words a little bit, and then you said, I say words illuminate certain things and hide other things. Words communicate meaning. Sharing words is an action, and that action, choosing those words, has consequences, whatever it is you share. Like if you said your example, you yell fire in a, you know, in a crowded movie theater, that action, that choice to share those particular words, right, had its consequence. Maybe it like cleared people out of there. You know, maybe it made the fire department have to come there. Who pays for that? Well, you falsely yelled that out, like those kinds of things. So the action. But I want to come back to this, like freedom of speech, right? Because it's a fundamental human right. And Jacob asked, what is freedom of speech in relationship to democracy? Right. And I think you were saying this, Tim. You know, it's the fundamental right to express opinions, ideas, and information without censorship, restraint, or punishment by a government. This is why it's important in a democracy. It's an important mainstay of a democratic society, is to have the fundamental right to express opinions, ideas, and information without censorship, restraint, or punishment by the government. And this worldwide is considered one of the most essential human rights and democratic principles. So now I emphasize that, Tim, here you say, without censorship, restraint, or punishment by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's a key factor of a democracy. But now, Tim, like you said before, if we're to break that down, like, you know, we're just talking about that. So that's a definition, but let's talk about what does that mean? Especially if we're thinking about how you said, like, with any right comes a responsibility. And I like that because that is truly embodying democracy. Yes, democracy is a way of organizing and ensuring or underwriting particular rights like freedom of speech or freedom of expression, right? But to explain that every right comes with responsibility, Well, you're free to express yourself, but not to harm others through lies, threats, or incitement to violence. All right? So most societies, most democratic societies are societies that, you know, believe, hey, human rights, these are a good thing. Like, we also, like, value life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, that there are certain aspects that are, I would say, you know, well-known monikers of the American citizenship, or ought to be for everyone in America, right? We'd advocate that, right? You have the freedom to express yourself, but not to harm others through lies, threats, or inciting violence. So it's really about meshing out that balance. And, you know, I will speak to, like, we're in that moment where it's like, well, you're infringing on my freedom of speech. Well, your freedom of speech is hurting this group. And that, like, we are just pointing fingers in all kinds of direction. And again, the level of violence, I'll say it, in discourse right now, coming from all kinds of different political positions, has reached a level where I think a lot of it actually does move beyond free speech and into the idea of, like, hey, you're actually threatening and inciting either violence or harm to others. Mm. And whether you agree with the sentiment or the origin or not, taking it to that level moves beyond freedom of speech or freedom of expression in sort of context, Jacob, of, like, governments and democracies, right? So the government in a democracy, if they're not valuing freedom of speech, then they're punishing, censoring, or restraining people from sharing or expressing their, you know, their thoughts, feelings, or any of those things.
Wow.
So I could say something unpopular or something that many people would judge to be just flat out wrong, and then I would suffer the consequences for doing so. I could also rob a bank, and I can suffer the consequences for doing so. But robbing a bank is not considered a right that I have. So in that, can you explain to me, as if I were a moron, what does it mean to have a right if you then suffer consequences for that right? Is the distinction that having a right means the government cannot punish me for that? Because I don't have a right to rob a bank, so I can be punished by the government, versus speech, I can only bear the consequences from my fellow citizens?
Yeah, let me give you, like, a historical context. Jacob, you love history, man.
Oh, I love it.
So if you think about it through history, people have been punished for expressing wrong ideas. And you brought up right and wrong. And without going into a whole thing around, like, well, we actually have this thing like scientific literacy and scientific method and consensus and deliberation that helps us arrive at, you know, understanding rights from wrong that aren't necessarily every moment situational. But take, for example, Galileo, persecuted for supporting, right, heliocentrism, right? Or, you know, people being jailed for political dissent, right? Freedom of expression, freedom of speech emerged historically as societies recognizing that suppressing ideas suppressed truth and progress, right? Anytime you start to go down the road of suppressing ideas, right, you start to do this, or you start deeming absolutely this is right and this is wrong without consensus, without conferring, without looking at, you know, trends, or, you know, like we would say, like our guest astrophysicist, Dr. Ethan Siegel would say, you know, scientific consensus, the scientific method replicated over and over again by different people, different professions around the world saying, hey, as we think through this, as we debate this over time, we're converging on some new knowledge base from which we might better understand this. That wouldn't happen without freedom of expression and freedom of speech. So this kind of emerged as, hey, this is a tough line to walk. Like, we don't want to censor people. We also can't have it be anything goes, right? And so it's in between. And you know, if think about it in another thing, Jacob, you like to talk about, like, the marketplace and capitalism sometimes. So another idea is thinking about ideas competing. Right. It's not my favorite analogy, but I think it works. Right. You know, we benefit sometimes, we might say we benefit from economic competition. We benefit when ideas kind of compete rather than just being imposed by an authority. this is the way it is, and it is because I say so. You know, we don't benefit by that kind of top-down thing. But when we start to deliberate, discuss, and have sort of a commonplace of doing such, again, I'm not saying that means anything goes, right? We tend to have found some of the best ideas emerge, right? When we have inclusion of many ideas, when we have an openness to listening to other views, when we think about, why might I disagree with that? And how do I act when I disagree? How do we engage in these conversations with enough patience to get to somewhere where we arrive on? Similar to kind of how the marketplace competition, right? Like goes, like we get better restaurants, better products, because over time, if you're presenting, you know, a subpar product, people might be like, well, I don't want to buy that. That's garbage. That's not, you know, I don't like the way it tastes, or I don't like, you know, the way it functions, and I'm moving on. The same, I think similar things go for ideas. So I'm a big fan of the open marketplace for ideas, which could be translated to freedom of speech and expression. That said, it's not anything goes, right? Just like there are certain things I can and can't sell in the marketplace, right? So there are some regulations that fall into that. And a democratic government is really responsible for setting that precedent, you know, not an authoritarian like censorship, but a catalyst for open dialogue and discussion.
You know, it kind of reminds me, because I'm a massive capitalist, as you were just saying.
Yeah, a massive one.
Sort of like J.P. Morgan or Rockefeller, that's basically me. it makes me think about the competition for ideas, like you said, and the sense that people have that as long as things are fair, they're okay with it. And from my perspective on capitalism has always been that capitalism is a really great system if you maintain it and keep it competitive and fair, and not when you allow things to turn into monopolies and oligopolies. And that really defeats the benefit of what is good about a capitalist system. So maybe you guys might be trying to say here that the similar things go to speech, where basically if you keep it open for a discourse rather than something more closed off. Tim, please.
I was going to say, Jacob, because I heard Johnny saying that too, and it kind of reminds me of this, of saying, you know, when we move away from inviting people that we don't agree with, from even allowing those disagreements to air, or giving somebody, you know, some form of, you know, alienation, right? It's just like, that's not a dialogue of competing ideas. It has become, you know, some form of a punishment for having an idea, right? And how did we get to this point that we're at is because there's been, you know, in a long time history of, actually relatively short here though too, like, how did we get to this point? People got incredibly left and right, to the point of saying, I don't like what you're saying, and I'm going to somehow create consequences because I don't like what you're saying, as opposed to saying that let's have a conversation about this. Let's have a dialogue. I like Johnny's connecting it too to kind of science and how we move things forward is because we absolutely keep open the space of conversation, of moving up, of learning something here, adjusting what we thought before we understood it that way, having that space. And somehow, some people would say not somehow, but it's the very thing. We have now in America have come to a sense of, we see somebody who disagrees with us as somehow, you know, some form of a pariah that needs to be silenced.
I mean, there should be a clear distinction made in words between adversary and enemy.
Right.
Right. Somebody who disagrees with you isn't necessarily your enemy, especially if you're sharing the same space, sharing the same air, sharing the same humanity. Right. I mean, this is something that I think you're talking about as as lost in this. We're caught up in who's right and who's wrong, not where difference gets us, right?
I got a good example. I want to just go, like, seriously, a personal example that I think illustrates for me freedom of speech, and it deals with religion. From my own standpoint, this was in college, and in college I started drifting away from the Byzantine Catholic dogma that I had, and was, you know, becoming, I'll point out, you know, an agnostic Christian, of which I believe myself to be. And I know some people will go, you can't do that. I know, but I am, and I was. And I remember having a conversation with somebody who was very concerned about me, because, and at that point, I didn't even, you know, I was a sheltered first generation college kid, very concerned about me being Byzantine Catholic, because of later, and when we were both dead, is what she was saying, is that she really liked me and wouldn't get to spend time with me in heaven. No, John, it's seriously, it's going to go. And I thought, no, seriously.
Yeah. We're giving you freedom of speech here, Tim.
That conversation. But I wanted to have a conversation of going, but if I'm believing, and I think at the same time, how is it that you're excluding me? Because I'm not excluding you because you're not Catholic. And I felt at that point that the interchange of a conversation of ideas stopped at that point. And that's not a freedom of speech, but the conversation became, it wasn't something to go forward. But here's what happened at that moment, though, too. I respectfully went, you know what? You're still a great person. I still like you. And it didn't turn into me taking their hardcore belief in what they believed in, and me saying you're wrong for holding that belief, and I don't, and I want you. You know, that's good, maybe that's good story, Tim.
Good story, Tim.
He's dissing me.
No, I'm not. I'm giving you a pat on the back for your freedom of expression day. The only thing I'm going to point out, though, Tim, is neither of you in that story are the government. Neither of you are a governing body. It's a great example of, like, hey, let's be open to different ideas and talk about how closed-mindedness may be hurtful and harmful to our humanity towards one another. When we're talking about freedom of speech, right, we're looking at a really clearly defined authority, like a government, especially in relationship to a democracy. And we can learn a lot by talking to our friends who have lived in dictatorships. This is why I'm like, you know, don't romanticize centralized governments or centralized governments. The right to speak freely, to have freedom of expression. And the best thing I can say, I'll exercise it right now too. Jacob, your example about capitalism, I appreciate it and I like it, but I'm going to exercise my freedom of a speech in this country that
I'm cutting your mic. I'm sorry. I'm the host. I'm cutting your mic. I don't allow this. And I'm not the government.
I'll just sign off.
Johnny, I'm not the government. I can turn you off. Go ahead.
Have a show without me. Okay. Have a show without me. That's what I'm saying. I'm exercising it, but I'm saying, like, you said capitalism is generally good for everyone. Unless you're at the bottom. That's how capitalism works. It's a system of exploitation. It's not the only economic system. And I have a free, like, I can say that, like, as a person who studies economics, but also as somebody who can say, I have freedom of expression to point out that capitalism sucks if you're at the bottom of it. If you're at the top or the middle, it's like, it makes some sense. Like, we get some products, but, like, we're not, like, burning our hands to make those products, or, you know, we're not the child labor factories that make capitalism possible. So, like, that's a freedom of expression. I can say that, and the government can't say, well, we're mostly a capitalist economy. You're going to jail for saying that. You know, Jacob could disagree, Tim could disagree, listeners could disagree, but the government can't, like, punish me for my freedom of expression. Now, if I was making that up, if I didn't have proof or I was just spreading lies, then they could, right? And so there are some boundaries to that. It's just more examples about how it works and me, you know, being a bully on the air right now.
But if I could offer somewhat of a criticism, Johnny, because I agree. Freedom of speech, fundamentally, when we're talking about in a legal sense, it's about the government and what they can or cannot do to the citizens. That is what the legal framework of freedom of speech is. But as a hardcore
historical one.
Yes. And as a hardcore Maoist myself, though, I will tell you that there are other forces at work in society that can impact your life just as much as the government, such as mega corporations who prey upon us. Our churches that control major aspects of our lives, our schools. There are more than just schools are government, unless they're a private mm-hmm. school. There are more than just state apparatuses that control the working class like myself and what we can or cannot say. So isn't there also mm-hmm. a wider principle of freedom of speech that applies in our world that we, that as citizens, we should try to take into our own views?
That's a great point to bring up, Jacob, and in a couple of contexts, freedom of speech doesn't exist for people living under Mao, right? They didn't, like the Mao's government doesn't say you have freedom of speech. Absolutely not. especially if it goes against things, there is punishment of it. That it's a signifier of democracy. And I love the point you bring up because we have to ask ourselves, is our government able to stand up to those influences like mega corporations who say, yeah, freedom of speech, but this guy said something bad about a company that, you know, might hurt our company. And if it's slanderous or a lie, that person should be held responsible, right? But if it's true and it's fact-based and it's based in evidence, right, then they shouldn't be punished for sharing that. And I get it, Jacob, you're saying like, hey, we're the working class. Like, we got to be careful what we say because there's always that saying like, don't bite the hand that feeds you. Right. And that goes back to like, can a corporation really overreach and do more punishment than say a government? Because I'll just say it, Tim, like you brought it up before, like we have some people getting fired in different areas that aren't government saying this person shouldn't have like they said something that we don't agree with. It's not the government saying that. It's a company who has pretty much the right to enact the consequence for things said. Now, it should be shocking and things to say like, but I thought we have freedom of speech. Well, we still have freedom of speech. And as Jacob kind of pointed out, mm-hmm. just maybe not as much as we thought in reality, because companies aren't necessarily democratic institutions, even if they exist in a democracy. And I think every working person out there knows this because they're like, yeah, I have freedom of speech. But if I talk to my boss like the Ice-T song that we started the show with, my boss is going to fire me, even if he's a pretty cool guy, whether he's Republican or Democrat. Like if I don't respect some boundaries around what I can and can't say or do, right? Then there's a consequence to my action. I think it's a sobering moment for a lot of people who may have thought like, well, I get freedom of speech. I can say whatever I want, right? Mm. In comedy or, you know, in my own opinion or on blogs. Well, like, yeah, you can, but not without consequence, right?
Dr. Tim, what do you think?
Whew. I'm not probably the scholar point on this. I'm maybe more mushy kind of feeling at this point. I'm just more looking at the moment and seeing that the pushing of people's emotional buttons and I don't know. Again, I had a great conversation again this morning with somebody who is very much more a conservative on the right, and we both just had this sense of going like dude, I really like you, and he liked me, and we were both admitting that this is horrible that somehow this is an example of the way things should be, because the humanity that people I disagree with have, I have to see that humanity. And I think that's kind of like this moment. So while we're getting wrapped up in, and again, not really legalese, but talking about, you know, the government taking a back and all this, just kind of come back to this too, and just saying like there's a humanness that, and there's Tim using the way he says that, human. There's a human aspect here that it's sad to me to not see each other as somebody I disagree with, but I'm never going to deny your humanity in that sense. And I've just seen it happen so often, and even to the point too, where, you know what, as we say, leftist woke ideology, I actually saw some of that happening too, where I was kind of like, I think this is going too far on the left. And I pointed it out in the bounds of what I thought was academia and a safe space. And I bore some consequences for challenging some of my academic colleagues that I wasn't as far left and as far woke as them. And they let me know that was the wrong answer or the wrong thinking that I had, and got alienated within the bounds of academia. And I felt that in that moment, I really was just like, I'm like, this is horrible, because you know what? How is it that they had a litmus test for me and I failed it. And that was a left litmus test. And I was like, I think I'm a pretty strong, I guess when I say liberal, but I guess now what I really meant was that liberal in the classic sense is the way I saw myself in, Johnny, you know, liberal democracy, not a liberal political. And that my difference of opinion shouldn't have gotten me alienated. And I was quite shocked as an early academic to find myself alienated for not passing the litmus purity test.
I have one last serious question for you two gentlemen today. States' rights is a big deal, but when it comes down to what does that actually mean, it turns out that almost everyone who ever says that they care about states' rights means when my state disagrees with the federal government, but it agrees with me, I believe in states' rights. But when my state disagrees with me, then I do not agree with states' rights. That gets me thinking about this whole freedom of speech thing, not as a law, but as a virtue that people, as citizens, believe is good. Do people today really care about the value of letting other people have opinions and express them? Did they ever? Has that changed? Tim, I know you were just starting as a teacher in the 70s when there was a lot of discourse and a lot of protest. Are we just noticing these disagreements more because of social media?
Yes. The social media has such an amplification in this place to dismiss it as saying this is the way things always used to be. No, it's not. It's different. The algorithmic amplification of rage, of disagreement. It's intentionally programmed to create, you know, chaos and disengagement and sadness and put up boundaries. I mean, that's how, here we go. It for some reason, that's the capitalistic economic model of social media is that business plan that they have, which is the more rage, the more quote clicks, the more clicks you get, the more profitable it is. And guess what's profitable? You want to get people engaged is not the right word at all, but you want to get people going. You create rage and you amplify rage, because rage creates clicks. Clicks creates economic opportunity for social media. That is different. That is so different today. And I think it amplifies the worst part of our natures. That's what I got to say for that.
Interesting. I agree. It's different because of social media, Jacob, if that's part in there. I'm not sure that this is too closely tied to economic profit, because I don't know how many people get angry, click and buy, or if there's a lot of ads necessarily attached to it. Although it does kind of create this different kind of tunnel for being like, you know, like you could get pretty far down a rabbit hole where the algorithm is only showing you particular views, which so like the technology can kind of limit the diversity of ideas that probably really exist out in your community. And I will also say this, it distances, and I'm big on this, like there are consequences to all actions. So if I'm sitting outside in the backyard and I'm talking to the neighbor and I'm saying some of the things I read online, maybe even that my neighbors are posting online, but we're saying them to each other, there is a social consequence that's very different in person than online. And I'm not advocating for violence, but I can say, like, I think a lot of people would be a little less flippant with their words if they're in the presence of other people where someone's going to look at them and say, not acceptable, or maybe even worse, like their words incite violence and put them in harm. And so that's, I think the distance that social media platforms has created has incubated, like Tim said, some of our worst behaviors, and those behaviors then become habit. And it's sort of just this vitriol kind of space that exists, that like the social contract of being out in public together used to not, like, it kind of mediated it. Some, that's me being a little nostalgic there for it, Jacob, but I'm not sure either of us answered your question.
I'm not sure either, but Johnny, very evasive, but I do want to point out.
Do you want to give us a shorter version of the question and we can hammer it out quick?
Yes. Okay. Do people really care about freedom of speech now? And did they, or, and if they didn't, did they ever?
I would say they don't understand how important and how good they have it. And they're complaining about infringement of freedom of speech, but they have yet to experience what that's like. And so I think there is a lot of like comfort in what people have believed as, oh, it's my right to say or do whatever I want. Because there's been a lot of acceptance and a lot of leeway. But I believe that is something that's going to be called into question pretty closely. And I don't think we've experienced that. Anyone alive here in the United States who spent all their time in the United States have experienced truly what it's like to have a loss of freedom of speech.
I agree, particularly too, Johnny, when you pointed out, because the government right now is not enforcing any type of restriction on freedom of speech.
They're getting pretty close, to be honest, within our realm of freedom of speech. There's some stuff that kind of is like, hey, is this in question? It certainly is. But I would argue, and this comes back to Jacob's question too, that's always been, there's an important,
the flavor of whoever's in charge of the government kind of has their own kind of anti-free speech flavor that gets put out there. For sure. But Johnny, hey, actually, economically though, the more time you spend on social media, it is economically. So what you just said about creating rabbit holes, that creates time online. That's the profitability right there. So just a clarification there.
Well, the thing about it, Tim, is that if I'm on my phone, right, and I'm looking at my Instagram reels and I see a bunny that jumped and it landed safely in the grass and it was adorable, I go, oh, that's nice. And then I flip and I keep going. But if I see some idiot said that California should get thrown into the sun, I'm going to spend the next 35 minutes staring at this thing, commenting, resharing how mad I am about that because the president just said something crazy. So that's how, and I'm not, it might not even be on purpose. You know, Instagram doesn't have to set that up. It's kind of natural that I see something bad and it makes me mad, and I see something good and I'm like, oh, that's good.
Well, except Jacob, that it will. It will say, Jacob spent more time on that sun comment.
Yes.
Let's give him more of those, because I think that's what Tim's talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
We want to keep him engaged longer, and we know that he looks at that longer, right? I certainly have that. I mean, I spend my time looking at hockey reels, and it just constantly keeps giving me longer and more hockey reels. It knows how to keep me glued to it, right? So I think that's what Tim's saying is the economic driving force there.
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
I would
argue it's an infringement on freedom of expression and speech to say like, you can't do that. But that's my personal view. I mean, this would be a great debate to have, because some might say like, well, that's actually, you know, manipulative or bad, you know, should be against the law. And I'd be like, well, like, it's my right to stay looking at, you know, stuff. Like, I want to watch more hockey reels. Like, that's my freedom to be looking at those. And don't tell Instagram they can't send me more hockey reels, because that's what I want to look at.
I absolutely agree. I will fight to the death for my right to look at stupid stuff on the internet. That's very important to me. But Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Tim Slecker, I'm afraid we're out of time. I believe we're going to cut away to the football game here in a minute. But before we do go, there's one last thing that we'd like to do here on the program.
Let's go!
In 60 seconds, Tim, you brought this up a bit, I think, during the show. At some point, we have our ideas as kids, and then we realize that people disagree. I want you to tell me, Tim, the first time you remember somebody you really like or that you love saying something you thought was stupid and realizing that sometimes the people with dumb ideas are people that you actually like.
Yeah. My Uncle Jack, you know, at Thanksgiving, made a comment about teachers and they're overpaid, and that made me mad, but I also love the guy.
Absolutely.
There's the example.
Tim, that's the important lesson, I think. I mean, everybody needs to go to Thanksgiving and realize that the people in this world with terrible ideas are represented by half the people around this turkey. And I think that's important to keep in mind when you're on Twitter and you're getting mad at people. Remember, this is just like that guy who eats turkey with me once a year. And maybe we should all give each other a little rest on some of these things. Johnny, do you remember the first time that somebody that you like or love had a really dumb point of view in your mind, and that taught you a little lesson?
I mean, yeah, probably from really early on. I mean, I'll just kind of quote the great Will Smith, right? Not the hockey player, but the rapper, although I like them both. You know, parents just don't understand. I mean, like, I loved my parents. They loved me. But they said a lot of stuff that I was like, I don't agree. And I would say, oh, yeah, why? And they would say, because I said so. And also, you know, they provided the shelter. They provided the food. They provided the safety. I mean, so there wasn't real. It was a good crash course in authoritarianism at a young age. And it taught me the difference. You know, later I can look back at it's a life skill. And listeners, you can relate to this. Our adversaries don't need to be our enemies, right? Like, your parents may disagree with you, especially when you're young. They can tell you you don't get to just play outside until whatever hour, or you can't eat candy all day long, right? I disagreed with them as a young person. Like, yeah, I should be able to do whatever I want. Right. But no, they in that moment, they were my adversary, but they weren't my enemy. So the lesson, I think Tim talked about this too today, the lesson in today's producer choice for me is just how important that distinction is. Disagree with people, but keep the humanity. Mm-hmm. An adversary is a wonderful thing. An enemy is something that we don't necessarily don't need. Right. Don't make your adversary an enemy when it's not necessary. We can disagree. There it is.
Your parents just don't understand.
Yeah, man. All right. Anyways, we got football games to go to. We got all kinds of stuff to happen here. Let's go. Yeah.
Guys, and thank with you for that, being here. Tim, do your thing.
And now it's time for your moment of zen. We should remind them that the words of the Declaration of Independence apply not only to people in this country, but also to people all over the world. People everywhere have the same right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's Producer's Choice. That was a little bit of a heavy one, but nonetheless, it was a great time. And remember, to grab other great podcasts filled with all kinds of Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or of course, you can always find us at the Civic Media website. Hey, and don't forget to catch us on Monday for Homeroom and every Wednesday for Class in Session. And of course, just like this Friday, you catch us again next Friday for our special drop of Producer's Choice and Pencil Busters. Don't forget on Saturdays to tune in and catch the Busted Pencils broadcast on 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.